Welcome Hi. To the TOVG podcast.
That was a bad last note.
Yes, yeah, so,
sorry. That's not.
Was that a brown note?
No, we can't do. We can't. That can't be the analogy that we start the final episode of the podcast on. Is a bad last note.
I thought I was taking you literally, not analogically.
No, wow. I was both.
Damn, Jimmy, you're
now we have an uphill
genius.
Battle now.
So
it's always been an uphill battle, Jimmy.
Hey, not us.
I had to bicycle. I'm sorry for beginning the podcast a little late, but I literally did have to huff and puff my bicycle uphill to make it here barely in time, which is
Georgia.
Partially why this is happening, but I have read the feedback. I've read the disappointed fans who are going to be lamenting our loss. They say they like the banter and will miss it. You know, people really like the banter. I've gotten a lot of comments coming in about how they would rather us prioritize the banter. In fact, so for this final TOVG podcast, we're playing real fast and loose with the outline.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be holding ourselves to as many rules as usual, which means a lot of talk about stuff that's probably less video game related than even the usual.
Really?
Yeah, which is weird because I have played a lot of video games this week.
God, no!
Yeah, so did I. I wanted to actually bring something to the table.
Even Matt played video games finally?
I signed my name to the devil, Origin Access, to try some video games.
Oh, wait, actually, God damn it. The one week when I want to break the rules, we can't break the rules. Matt, how were video games this week?
No, we can break the rules. We can have video games.
No, I'm actually... This is why it frustrates me so much to have to follow the rules, even though I want to break the rules, is that I am actually genuinely interested in knowing how good of a deal EA's Origin Access whatever thing is. So I actually genuinely really... From the bottom of our heart, from the two cockles of our friendships rubbing against each other, want to know how you felt about video games that you played this week on the EA Origin Early Access Deluxe Supreme Edition Fun Service.
All right. So I wanted to play Mirror's Edge Catalyst anyway. All right. I was like, you know what? There's a couple things. So I was looking, I saw that you could play Mass Effect for 10 hours straight up. Okay. 10 hours, Battlefield 1 for 10 hours. Like, that's a really good free trial. Then you had like a bunch of vault games, not many, I take you, that you come free, which is like Battlefront.
I can speak from experience that 10 hours is in fact enough to have more than your fill and eventually get sick of Battlefield 1. So yes, you are correct. That is a good deal.
Yeah, I got sick of it immediately. Not my thing. I am more of a Bad Company guy. I knew this going in. That's why I don't really particularly buy these games straight out the get-go. Yeah. I kind of wait until George is like, yo, a couple guys want to play some Battlefield after it's been out for like a year and has all the DLC packs and it's like $10-15.
That's what you should do,
sure,
kids.
We could get $10-15 out of that. That's like watching a movie.
Wait until Battlefield 1 Premium Edition is $10-15 and maybe by then they will have made it less spammy of... splash damage with high DPS.
Holy crap. You spawn and you die.
Yep.
You
thank
spawn
you.
And you die. The airplane is dropping bombs over you constantly.
One of my favorite clips that I've recorded of all of last year was a clip of me just walking around the desert completely by myself alone in Battlefield 1 for like a solid minute. Seeing a like cool gun on the ground to pick up in like the sandy dunes with no one around, and as soon as I pick it up and look at it and start to walk away, Like, I just die. I don't know how or why. And the death camera slowly pans up to show like a tiny airplane. like just kind of casually glide away.
Sounds like it.
I don't know. Some people have been able to get stuff done in that game. I can't get anything done in that game. As soon as I try to do anything, I blow up.
That's how I felt about the Star Wars Battlefront, the current one, not the old one edition.
Oh, you know what it is? You know what we should start calling those? New Star Wars Battlefront.
New Super Star Wars Battlefront?
Yes, yeah. New Super Star Wars Battlefront. New Super Star Wars Battlefront 2. That way you can differentiate it from Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Right.
Hopefully that one will be better. Not to say it's... I would say I would enjoy Battlefront more than I enjoy Battlefield 1, for sure, in my opinion. Because it's just like a fun game. You just drop in, you start shooting some things with some pew-pew noises that you recognize from your childhood, which we'll get into later, George. I know you're scratching yourself in anticipation of talking about Star Wars. We have the Battlefront that you can play continuously, yeah. no locks. Mirror's Edge, the new one. You know, a couple little indie games like Unravel.
Super Mirror's Edge.
Yeah. Super Mirror's Edge. A couple things that no one cares about, like Need for Speed. You know,
Watch yourself.
The Lux Edition.
Underground 2 was legendary.
Well, every like so 5 years. That's every 4 or 5 years, they make a good Need for Speed, and the rest of them are just like kind of remakes of the older ones, re-releases, and I don't know.
There's another one that I like that Midnight was Club? Xbox 360 era. Midnight Club is godlike.
Oh, Need for Speed Most Wanted was one of the good ones.
You remember the music from these games? Oh my gosh.
Hell yeah.
Riding on the storm.
Oh god, yes. And then fucking Need for Speed Most Wanted had Disturbed in it, I think. It had Decadence by Disturbed and Hand of Blood by Bullet for My Valentine.
Great.
And since that was my metal phase, I turned off everything else on the soundtrack.
On the other hand, who remembers Need for Speed Online?
Nobody. I actually didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, they actually took it down after a year of no one playing it. Oh, Need for Speed World, that's what it was called. Previously known as Need for Speed World Online.
Super Need for Speed
You
World's 3D
You
World. You. No, because you Slim. Would be underground, so it can't be you. There's already a Need for Speed you.
Anyways,
some things of note would be Battlefield Hardline that I'm pretty sure no one cares about. Titanfall 1, Dragon Inquisition, which is pretty good if you haven't played it. It's a nice RPG to get into.
Did they give you a time limit for Inquisition?
Say again?
Do they give you a time limit for Inquisition?
No. These are all nice. Like you can play unlimited for.
What's the cost?
This War is of Mine, huh?
What's the cost?
$5 a month. Or $30 for the year? What the hell was that? Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. I was just like,
just sign up, play these games, and then quit.
Instead of buying PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds this week, I could have just bought a year of like all of those good games that you just talked about.
Now, I don't doubt that if this catches on and works, it will all of a sudden become a really bad deal like 5-7 years in. But as of right now, this sounds like a win for consumers across the globe.
Yes, see, it is $30 for a year.
I guess I don't know if this is a concern that's even new about this system, but like I'm someone who cares to an extent about owning the games that you buy and archival purposes.
Right.
So like, you know, it's easy to go pick up your Super Nintendo and pop in Mario World and play it.
Now like you're starting to turn my mind straight back over again.
See,
but for
that's
$5
the thing,
a month, I don't know. I feel like Like, that's worth the sacrifice. The savings are worth the sacrifice.
Right. It's a great deal. And especially if you want to get a taste of games and then, like, oh, I want this one forever. And you go purchase whatever the fuck, you know, like Titanfall 1 or something.
Right. Because I never got to play that.
Buy a physical copy on something. Actually, I don't even know if you can really play Titanfall 1 these days. Is there even people playing on PC, especially with 2 out?
Did you try, Matt?
I didn't try. Because it's only multiplayer, and I didn't really I didn't really get into it, I would say. I wouldn't say I didn't like it. It just felt like something was missing from the gameplay for me.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I felt like people weren't going to play it after like the beta. Like, I feel like there should have been a little bit more sauce into it. Hopefully, Titanfall 2 is going to be a little bit better, because I want to try that. Because I think the trial, you can get a trial also.
It's just the consensus you hear from fans who have played both is that Titanfall 1 is actually the better of the two.
Whoa, really?
Even though they're both pretty good. Titanfall 2 has a kick-ass single-player campaign, which is still just like 5-6 hours long, which for like $5, plop it
that
down.
That doesn't discount it. That doesn't discount it as a good game. I played the multiplayer for a few hours, and
it
I
doesn't
thought
discount
Titanfall 2
it as
solid.
A good game. What I said was that among the hardcore dedicated fans, the consensus is that Titanfall 1 is the better of the two.
Mm. I don't know if I can make that call, because I played Titanfall 1 much more than I played Titanfall 2 multiplayer wise. That's a hard call. I'll defer. I think, Titanfall 1 might be better because of the Titan customization was a little more liberal, and I really liked the prestiging system that it had. Titanfall 2, as far as I played, was a lot of, like, you get kind of a fully pre-built Titan, and you could change, like, a couple things on it, and there's, like, 3 or 4 frames.
Also, bunny hopping is supposed to be a lot easier and slower in Titanfall 2, whereas in Titanfall 1, it's supposed to be a little bit more of a true test of skill. I can't comment on that because I didn't play it, but when I was doing my video specifically about bunny hopping, that's a lot of what I was reading was centering on how in Titanfall 2, they give you a button for it and expect you to do it, whereas in Titanfall 1, it was more the traditional, like, oh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, there's this quote-unquote glitch here. I hope no one abuses it.
Just a quick one. All the Dead Spaces, all the Crysises, all the Dragon Ages, all the Mass Effects, and,
Matt,
of course,
what are you
Fury.
About? There's only one Dead Space, isn't there? They never made another Dead Space game after the first one.
And Fury, which is a really great title.
Wait, really? Fury is in there? Why?
Yes. I don't know.
Why is Fury, of all the games that are in the EA Access Fun subscription pack, why is, like, Fury, I thought, was just an indie self-published. It's on Steam. Yeah, developer is the Game Bakers. Publisher, the Game Bakers. Maybe it's the console version or something?
I'm curious, personally, how much the devs or people who made the games are getting from this service. Like, I know most of this shit is old, so they're probably selling, like, I'm sure they're not selling a single copy of Titanfall 1 anymore, but, like, Fury or some of the more recent games, I wonder if they're getting paid out from this at all, because it seems like not a lot of money going into a lot of games.
I mean, $5 for a month to play
EA
all these
we're
games
talking about. Whew. They probably have the power, the reserves to take this loss for a while, to win over the hearts and minds of consumers, and then eventually figure out how to get lazy about it, and then figure out how to rip people off and get away with it, and then turn evil before someone else figures out a good deal. Because that's how business works in this society of ours.
To counterpoint your, this is EA we're talking about, I provide the evidence that this is EA we're talking about. And resources are not. When have they ever taken any steps to show good faith in treating developers correctly or right or good?
I mean, maybe not developers, but they started the
Square.
Yeah,
I always get them mixed up. whatever. EA fucks over everybody.
So this kind of relates to a tweet I made that was controversial about how video game rental business is not as much a thing anymore. You know, everyone was super keen to reply on my tweet claiming that the industry was dead. I got a lot of responses that were saying, no, Redbox and Gamefly still exist, but they're not the same, man. I don't know.
Redbox exists in game rental format if you have either an Xbox One or a PS4 and you want a library of about 20 games total between the two.
And they also run out very, very fast. Because it's just a tiny little box in front of a store. It's not an entire store full of cardboard boxes of copies of the thing you want. That was what the magic of Blockbuster was back in the day before they closed down permanently, I think, in 2009. I also saw a lot of replies to the tweet that were just like straight up revisionist history, talking about how expensive it was and how Blockbuster killed themselves by charging so much. When that prompted me to go look at old Neograph threads of people complaining about Blockbuster raising the prices to like $7 a week.
I mean, it's $7 a week for one game, and that was in 1996.
The thread I was reading was from when they were closing down. The consensus was like, wow, I can't believe they raised their price to $7 a week when they're clearly going out of business right now from competition against Netflix.
That's
actually a better deal than Redbox. That Redbox is $3 a day. So you can go to Redbox, rent your single player, play it once, throw it away, you're done. The Order 1886.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the only game that I think falls into a fair enough category to rent for $3
nowadays, a day. Because specifically, I think there is less of a rental market to demand the audience that those games were for. Like, I noticed this when I was playing through the old Resident Evil games. Like, those are short. Resident Evil 2 has two campaigns in it that are 4 hours each. You could knock both of those out in a lunch break. And that would be a sin nowadays. And I really think that, like, I'm not saying this is the one end-all, be-all conclusive reason why it was more tolerable back then, but I think the fact that you could rent it for $6 for a week and then throw it away when you're done and never need to play it again is why there was less consumer angst over short games pre-2009 than there are nowadays. So they would do well to figure out a way to fill this hole. And I think subscription services that are a stupidly good deal, like this EA Access thing, are a way to do it. The thing is, I just don't trust EA to not fuck it up half decade or a decade down the road. And in fact, I don't know if I would trust anyone to not fuck it up. Because, Jimmy, like you were talking about, you don't get you don't get good points for preservation for longer term historical benefits with that model. Whereas with rental sales, like at least it's still a physical copy. Like you can buy the rental physical copy of the game when the Blockbuster closes down. And I know tons of friends of mine who have like piles of like shitty Blockbuster label boxes where they were just like during the closeout sales able to pile on a huge collection.
I should have done that. Rest in peace.
Yeah, no.
I did manage to get a copy of Too Human, though, before that.
Oh, yeah, congratulations. Man. That's one of the good ones. Game. You're going to play that a lot.
I haven't played it once.
You should definitely pop it in today, man.
You're just letting it age, aren't you? You're letting it like refine a fine wine. And ferment.
In all honesty, I actually don't know. Oh, no, it's right here. Okay, cool. I was going to say I don't know where it is, but it's because it's in a shitty Blockbuster case, so like... Or no, it was a GameStop, like, $1 purchase.
I have a, I think I bought it from GameStop, but it was in a Blockbuster case. Copy of Ninja Gaiden Black for the original Xbox, not to be confused with the Xbox One.
Such a good game. Such a good game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you give me that shit. Ninja Gaiden Black is a fucking masterpiece.
I kind of remember just spamming the dive kick through my whole run, though.
I don't think that you played it.
Maybe I had it on not the right mode. I thought this was what they were supposed to fix in the Black version.
No, I don't think you played it at all.
No, I played it. I remember Ayane was in it, and she, like, chops people up, and there's, like, the super sexy purple demon lady boss, and in the first level, it turns out you were just training all along. Wow!
Oh, wow, the spoilers are real.
Yeah,
that's when you like play, like, 20 half an minutes hour? In.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe 30 if you're slow.
I remember.
All I'm saying is, yeah, you're not a real Ninja Gaiden fan unless you got the cricket bat of death. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then
you're not
you
a
can
real.
All die. You're not a real Ninja Gaiden fan. I'm kidding,
of course.
I was
much more into DMC3 when I was that age anyway, but...
Well, Origin Access is pretty great for the $5 I paid for it.
Nice.
I played Mass Effect Andromeda for a few hours.
Cool.
Do you guys want to see where? All right. So,
yeah,
right.
Where's this going?
Okay. All right. So, you know, they fixed a few things. You know,
like the game?
The animations. I wouldn't say the game. Okay, so you know, like, the famous "my face is tired." What they did was just put her hand over her face. My face is tired, and she like puts it down a little bit, and then she removes it. There's a lot of things that could be, if you're not paying attention to it, you won't really realize it. But I have to say, because I've seen jank and I'm very aware of jank, there is some jank in this game. It does not feel like a AAA $60 game.
What about the combat?
The combat is fun.
Okay.
The combat is fun.
Because I saw a few videos of the combat, and my first impression was like, wow, this looks like it would feel better than previous Mass Effect combats.
I think it does.
Okay.
I think it like the just platforming, just jumping feels great. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. You didn't have a jump button in the old games. You got a jump button now?
Being able to climb using that jetpack.
Catching up to the Witcher.
Yeah. Oh my god, you can jump now. It's actually really great. Like the first place you're at, like it's like the tutorial, I guess you can say, where you're like use the jetpack for the first time, you're like platforming on some platforms and climbing some ledges, and it feels great. And I'm like, wow, this is a Mass Effect game. This is actually not that bad. A few things though, like outside of combat, the animations kind of being stuck, you know, oof, the way people walk. You can see like sometimes their arms are 2 inches their chest when they're talking.
Oh, do they clip inside of themselves?
Yeah, they clip in inside of themselves, and you can see like it's too awkward, so it makes looking at it a little awkward.
So maybe they haven't caught up to The Witcher just yet.
No, they haven't.
I can't
when
believe
you,
they
you
have.
Didn't see the side by side with Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect Andromeda, and the difference between those two. Like it actually looked better in Mass Effect 1 than it did in Andromeda. That's really
and I remember Mass Effect
really
2
telling.
Looking extremely impressive for the time, especially the facial quality on the aliens, and noticing a downgrade even going from that to Mass Effect 3.
Oh, was it Mass Effect 2 that they were applying it to? It might have been Mass Effect 2.
I mean, maybe they were comparing it with Mass Effect 1 just to make it sting harder. You know, a lot of videos that are a little more vindicative and spiteful try to
really push it in
there. Try to
bend
the story a bit to twist the knife a little harder.
There is a certain scene. I can show you the video. Like I recorded the video of, because you can replicate this. If Liam, the black guy with the frizzy hair, he goes into your party very early on. If you don't put him in your party, there's a cut scene where he leaves your side when you're flying to an island or a planet, should I say. And then all of a sudden he's right behind you in the next scene and he's just standing there and like the shadow reveals his face while this shrill of music, you know, like pops up and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Very dramatic.
And she's like standing behind you the whole cutscene. He's not supposed to be there. And it's just really awkward. Really awkward. It's like little things like that of when you're talking to people, like, you know, the Garrus race, Turians, their little eye juice, the little eyes are like puffing out of their like face mask thing. it is not supposed to, when they're blinking and it just, their flesh just kind of like pokes out and clips through their face. And it,
no,
like,
that's biology.
Yes.
That's that's part of the lore.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware.
You just weren't immersed.
Maybe I'm just looking too deeply.
No, there's a procedure to it. In order to fully immerse yourself in the Mass Effect universe, you have to consume a lot of drugs and alcohol beforehand. make sure you don't play any good games first. And then you're ready to go.
Here's the video. Another post in Discord.
Perhaps the last one that the viewers will never see.
Yes. It's okay. I'll somehow make... We can make it a video podcast. Everything is blank until this exact moment.
Our listeners could see.
So... Yeah, you can see him run off and then you see him pop up in the back. Just little awkward things, you know, that just kind of make it a little janky, like camera zooming up to their face when it's not supposed to. It doesn't seem like it's supposed to, because you can see like the textures get a little wonky a little bit, and then it zooms back out to you, and then when it goes back to the other character, it kind of zooms straight up into their eye, and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? Zoom, zoom. And this is all in the first few hours, and you're like, come on, what are you guys doing? But yeah, that Liam thing, it made me not want to put him in my party. I already didn't like him. Now I just don't want him in my party anymore. At all. Like, he's just standing behind me like that. That's just weird. I'm going to stop playing it until hopefully they fix everything else. I was hoping that it wasn't so bad. They fix a lot of the bad things. Like, you know, when she wakes up out of cryo sleep, she's not like smiling and doing all this weird stuff with her face. It's actually normal. There's a lot of things that were shown that are now fixed for the most part. It's just a lot of jank in there now that it feels like a budget game more than a full-fledged AAA, you know, from like a, you know, a high BioWare developer.
And
you know?
Maybe this is why it's important for cheaper spin-off versions of games to be aware of their limitations and work with them. Much like how Pillars of Eternity would just have all this stuff happen in text boxes.
Yeah,
don't have that opportunity to disappoint the player with bad animation. Although, I just want to say, I love the idea of you making the decision of who to bring along on your party based on like who has good animation and who doesn't.
Yes.
Those are the kind of heavy, weighty moral decisions that BioWare traditionally wants their players to have to consider when going through a massively effective RPG experience.
I think it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable to have to make that choice just because he's like standing behind me is the most creepiest thing. Anyways, yeah, that's Mass Effect. I poked fun at it for a little while, but the combat's pretty saucy, and the writing is a little off. Not bad, but it's just not what I'm expecting, I guess. Especially coming from a Pillars of Eternity, which is like really cool when it comes down to certain scenes, even though it's very thick with some
thick.
Some garbage. I mean, some good
thick
garbage.
With garbage. With good garbage. I can't tell if you're talking about Mass Effect or Pillars.
I really enjoy that game.
Yeah, just skip
all
the gold text.
You just got to reread it a couple times, you know, to make sure that it sinks
into the
brain. And
don't even read the gold text.
Yeah, you got to have a big cup of coffee, you know.
To use on the text that's not gold.
Yes, exactly.
I think this is one of the points I stressed in the review. Like, please ignore the backer texts in Pillars of Eternity. They are not worth the time it takes to read the walls of text there. The other walls of text are fine. If the font is gold, though, click away.
You remember that was one of the things that turned me off. I was the first time I played, I was like, I can't believe I have to read all this text.
A lot of people got turned off by it.
Yeah, and then I went back and I avoided. I did not read not one. As soon as I saw a gold name, I passed by. I understand the backers want to have their own story. I don't care about it. because I don't want to waste my time reading your stuff.
I will gladly admit that Pillars is a game best enjoyed if you willfully ignore at least one of the big weaker aspects of it. And that is the backer texts.
I mean, 77,000 fans.
So we good on
there you go. What do you guys been playing
Origin
or watching?
Access. Agonizing insertion fund subscription.
What? I'm confused.
What did that sentence even? It just sounded like you said words. Is there a statement or a question?
are we done talking about turning games into a service that sure. might not work out as well in the long term, but might still be pretty sweet nowadays while they can get away with charging
$5
for it?
Sounds like you're not done talking about it, but I am.
So, speaking of space-based science fiction series,
let's talk about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. No, go ahead. You've waited long enough.
I have. And I have a confusing and sad, but kind of uplifting and surprising and funny tale to tell of the experience of rewatching the original Star Wars trilogy, but I saw the Blu-ray versions for the first time. Like, every few years, I go back and watch these movies, and I think around the time I hit, like, 2021 was when I was like, holy crap, Return of the Jedi actually isn't that great of a movie. Because when I was a kid, that was my favorite one, because that's the one where the good guys win. But I, like, get it now, because, like, rewatching it as an adult, that one is the one made for dumb kids to buy toys with. The other ones have a lot more humanity in them, I feel. But...
Yeah. I mean, I think the general consensus of the masses is that Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars film ever created.
And every time I rewatch it, the more it, like, gradually turns into one of my favorite movies of all time.
I still really like Return of the Jedi. I like all the set pieces, and it has a lot of fun stuff that they do in it.
It's such a Muppet movie, though, and it's like... Watching it in the Blu-ray version, where you can, like, see the gunked on paint, occasionally you might see, like, the shadow of a puppet's armature stick popping out at the edge of the frame.
Well, I don't and never have done Blu-ray. I never liked it, because every time I was shown Blu-ray when it came out, it was on those shitty ultra-high-def TVs with frame blending, so everything runs at, like 800 frames per second.
Why?
And it looks like you're watching home movies. Like, that shit's stupid.
If you turn that off and watch the Blu-rays of Star Wars, you're on a roller coaster ride of the movies looking extremely crisp and impressive, but also every single imperfection of practical effects suddenly being visible in a way that was clearly not meant to be visible.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's why this was... It was a truly profound experience, because, like, with every new frame, with every new angle, that is, I was, like, seeing stuff that I didn't want to know was there. Like, sometimes you'll see a sliding door in the background, like, kind of bounce on the ground a bit when it hits the ground. It'll be like... And the lower, it's just a few pixels of extra motion at the door's edge that on any lower or blurrier of a picture you wouldn't notice, but all of a sudden it becomes extremely obvious that there was just someone backstage holding that door open on a pulley, and they just dropped the rope to make it close. And I always, like, felt like the doors were, like, the defining line for Star Wars. Like, doors in other sci-fi movies looked so much cheaper. Now the doors in Star Wars look cheap, and I don't know what to do with myself anymore.
Did you just glitch? Did you just immediately stop talking and then start back up again?
It Discord server must have lagged out, but
fine.
I think George kept talking through the whole thing, so it doesn't sound like we couldn't hear what he was saying.
Okay. Viewers at home will have the uninterrupted George whining about how good the Blu-ray version of Star Wars is.
It's the final caveat of the TOVG podcast. Now the listeners saw something that the podcastees will never know.
It'll be a mystery for what I was just talking about. Will be a mystery for you guys. So I'll just go ahead and move.
I won't even listen to it afterwards. I'll skip over that part when I'm editing.
So you know how the Battle of Hoth is like a really impressive cinematic sequence. It's like seamless cuts between all sorts of different kinds of effects, and they like do things with scale that you wouldn't see another movie, like the giant AT walkers, which would just look like too big to keep in a studio, just look good. Yeah. In the Blu-ray version, on the other hand, it's painfully, painfully obvious which shots are miniatures, which shots are like rubber props, and which shots are life-size props, in which case you usually only see a little bit of it. Like, it's especially evident with tauntauns. Tauntauns turn into claymation in some angles, and then props at other angles, and oh my god.
That's been evident since, like, the start, though. I've always been able to tell when they did claymation tauntauns.
But the rubber tauntauns are, like, I don't know if it was intended for the face of these tauntaun props to be in the shots or not, because they look so bad, and you hear the mouth noise. You hear, wah, 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 but you don't see the prop's mouth move. And it's just like, because of the sound design and the way the prop is positioned in the frame and the motion they give the prop, and just how, like, well made the prop is in the first place, let's be honest here, you don't notice it. But then on the Blu-ray version, all of this suddenly becomes painfully visible. And it, like, it makes me appreciate practical effects and how much work, a truly, like, terrifying amount of complex, incredibly difficult, incredibly skilled work went into making the effects of this movie. But at the same time, I don't want to see every shot and be like, wait a minute, I see how they did that.
Wait, you're talking about the Blu-ray, official Blu-ray editions?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that the stuff that they add CG to?
They did, but they can't do it in every shot. They only do it in, like, a scant few shots, actually. And now it's more obvious than ever. Because that's the, like, easy legal way to do it, and I don't have to, like, torrent up the despecialized edition with anti-aliasing applied to cover up all these things.
Despecialized edition is the best. That's the way I watched it.
That is. But you see, I'm a piece of trash.
You want to hurt. That's what it is. You want to eat the garbage. You want the sludge, man. You want the wrinkled garbage can sludge.
Friend's disc,
ring it out
it
like a rag
PS4,
right into your mouth.
Flop down on the couch, cuddle up, and watch some old Star Wars movies and giggle at how bad George Lucas's storytelling decisions are.
Now I want to see, like a beautifully shot, like, 4K video of George, like, from several angles, sitting in his living room watching the Tauntaun scene from Star Wars while Hurt by Johnny Cash plays in the background.
I can make it happen.
So, make it happen, Matt.
There's a shot in the original version of Empire Strikes Back where the gang is huddled up in the Millennium Falcon and Han Solo turns on the hyperdrive and they all lurch backwards and C-3PO falls against the wall into a pile of cables. For some reason, in the special editions, that shot of C-3PO falling back and hitting a pile of cables is in A New Hope instead of an Empire Strikes Back. Like, he just took a completely incidental, like, pointless shot that just, like...
Like a slapstick shot that was for flavor?
Yeah, like how fast the ship suddenly is accelerating. And for some reason, just, like, took it out of one movie and put it into another. Oh, but speaking of Return of the Jedi not being that great of a movie, holy shit, this one got absolutely butchered, repulsively, like, repulsively altered.
I know exactly
altered.
What you're talking about, because I saw you live tweeting it.
Yeah, okay, so... Oh my god, it was surreal almost, because they're, like, breaking the rules of cinema by doing these changes. They're going into avant-garde experimental territory that you'd expect out of, like, a David Lynch film, but no, it's fucking Star Wars. So at the end of Return of the Jedi, the good guys blow up the Death Star 2. Luke Skywalker. Yeah, spoilers. Luke Skywalker defeats the bad guys. They blow up the bad guy's space station weapon. Everyone has a party and goes home. And the bad guy who turned over to the light side of the Force at the very last moment becomes a ghost like the other good Jedi. And they use Hayden Christensen from the prequels for his ghost.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Here's the thing.
What is the thing?
I understand the reasoning from for the point of that. It's bad reasoning. Understand how they got there.
Jimmy,
though.
You can't play devil's advocate with this.
No, I absolutely can. Because I'm going to say it's stupid and a shitty idea anyway, because Hayden Christensen was one of the worst parts of the prequels perspective.
What's your claim and your grounds and your backing for taking the wrong side of this argument?
So the idea that they were going for by replacing the ghost of a guy that you have literally only seen for 3 seconds with the ghost of Hayden Christensen is to accentuate that by but like the fact that he's there, it shows that it's showing him in his last state when he was still a good Jedi before he went down the path of evil.
When he was on the light
side.
If
that makes sense. Exactly. It's showing like the ideal of Anakin Skywalker.
So how come Yoda and Obi-Wan are still like old and wrinkly and
because they were always on the good side. They were good to the end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just unfair.
Right. Because the whole deal of fucking Vader throwing Palpatine into the pit and saving his son in his last moments, that is a defining return to good.
Yeah.
So it should be modern Anakin, not fucking Hayden Christensen. So I get their reasoning, but they like missed a crucial point of their whole story that makes it function. And yeah.
Okay.
Also just in general, I'm assuming the Blu-ray version is the one where Darth Vader repeats the same sound clip of no from episode three when he throws Palpatine into the pit, which is stupid.
But you don't notice that unless you've seen episode three. It doesn't sound too wacky. What is extremely wacky is Hayden Christensen being the ghost of the actor we just saw die, who is a completely different person. That's wacky number one. I got more wackies on the way.
Well, if you go in order, it's not so wacky, not that I...
You should never, ever watch Star Wars in order.
I've been reading about
it goes 4, 5, 6, The Force Awakens, and maybe Rogue One if you're interested, and never watch 1, 2, and 3, and you'll be fine.
Why, Jimmy? Aren't they good movies?
You can YouTube the pod racing scene.
Episode
that one's really fun.
Not a good movie. Return of the Jedi. I don't even think Return of the Jedi is a good movie.
Return of the Jedi is a good movie, George.
It's a real different tone and place and strategy than the others. And I feel like it's not only out of character, but also kind of boring. Me and the lady friend I was watching it with, we both actually genuinely, without even trying, fell asleep during the second half of Return of the Jedi.
Well, maybe you're just an old man who hates fun, George.
So anyways, going back to the very end of Return of the Jedi and the wackiness going on, there's another scene I want to bring up that is the one I live tweeted.
I know exactly
they
what you're talking about.
Cut to people celebrating at Naboo.
Yeah.
Which is a city that you saw in episode one, very, very rarely throughout the rest of the prequels. Nothing of significance or import happened in Naboo. According to the expanded universe lore canon, Naboo, I don't think, was actually occupied properly by the Empire, like Bespin did in the last movie. They cut in a CGI celebration scene at Bespin, but that would make sense if you go through order. It would completely not make sense if you just watch Return of the Jedi by itself, because you're suddenly cutting to all these places you don't see. But Naboo really makes no sense. Coruscant, they have a celebration scene at Coruscant where they like pull down a Saddam Hussein statue of Emperor Palpatine, and that makes a little bit of sense in the original trilogy because Leia very briefly mentions a Imperial capital city. I don't think they refer to Coruscant by name in the original trilogy, though, but it exists in the universe. It was in the games at the time. But Naboo did not. Naboo was not invented until, like, 1999.
My only way to justify them adding Naboo is, like Padme was from Naboo. It was her, brother-in-law? That's Bail Organa that raised Leia. So, like, there's a tangential tertiary connection from Leia to Naboo. Through lineage, but that's a huge stretch
because the reason why this is like avant-garde art filmmaking is that they are wrapping up conclusions and resolving problems that were not even problems in the movies. They're like, they show Jar Jar Binks waving his arms in Return of the Jedi, the Blu-ray edition. There's a scene of Jar Jar Binks celebrating on the rooftop of Naboo City, and the subtitle at the bottom of the screen says, "We are free!" And he's just like, completely out of nowhere, a resolution comes to resolve a climax and a problem that was not a part of any of the movies.
When was Jar Jar Binks
a slave from the Empire?
I mean, technically in episode 3 he was a senator.
But why would he
under the tyranny of the new Imperial Order.
Which means that he was actually abetting it. If you look at the expanded backstory lore universe, Jar Jar Binks actually, when he finished his political career, he returned home to Naboo and they ostracized him and wouldn't get him a real job, so he was a street performer for kids. Even though the parents knew who he was and hated him, the kids didn't know, so they would just laugh at him, like, squirting fish in and out of his ears. But
I also want to note that the expanded universe has been deemed not canon anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't count anymore. So,
but also, the worst part of that scene in Return of the Jedi is letting us know that Jar Jar Binks is alive and well.
Or just reminding us that he was even a character at all.
Yeah.
Like Hayden Christensen being a ghost, and then all of a sudden, like, jump cutting to celebrations on fucking Naboo were, like, so borderline bizarre that I like almost want to believe it's some kind of experimental postmodern art going on.
Oh boy.
But yeah, it's still fun. I mean, it was like shocking being like, oh my god, for the first time in my life, Star Wars now looks dated. But it's still also a lot of fun, like, seeing which shots are paintings and which aren't, because on the other side, I was like, wow, they really had me fooled this whole time. Like, a lot of what I thought were models and action figures of spaceships flying around in Return of the Jedi were actually paintings. Really freaking good, super realistic, super detailed paintings that genuinely had me fooled this whole time, which like, that's why it was such a roller coaster. It was a roller coaster of, like, appreciating practical effects at the same process of seeing them fail to immerse me. And so it's like, it was a profound experience let's see, how did I put it really poetically? Appreciating the terrifying complexity of movie making while also being terrified of the inevitable process of aging and death. Even the most impressive and skilled art will always look dated eventually.
I mean, when George Lucas gets his hands on it, then yeah.
Yeah, it kind of speeds up that process.
Yeah.
So there's...
He's like the wrong cup at the end of Indiana Jones. Like, if you drink from the George Lucas cup, your skin just, like, turns to spiderwebs and falls off your bones.
I wonder what the Blu-rays of the Indiana Jones movies look like.
Let's not even. Ooh. Let's just.
Oof.
I picked up PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Okay. The most decently okay game with the worst name.
Yeah, that's not a great name. That already makes me want to, like, disregard it, because it sounds like a dumb YouTuber name, like Super Bunny Hop.
It is a dumb YouTuber name. PlayerUnknown's is a dumb YouTuber.
Player unknown.
I'm not kidding. I don't know if he was a YouTuber or a streamer, but he was part of the Arma team, original Arma team mod.
Oh, wait, and so was he a modder or a YouTuber or a game developer?
I don't fucking know.
Does he have a real name?
He's an internet person. I'm sure he has a real name. Most people do. But as far as I know from what articles I read on this game, he was on the Arma team and did some consulting for H1Z1, right. I think. And then he decided to just kind of take those you know, moderate successes and be like, I can make it. And then got, as far as I know, a Korean studio to sort of crunch time crank out Battlegrounds in about 6 months. And it shows. It's an early access game. Not optimized well, but...
it's gotten better.
Once you get into the meat of the gameplay, it is, but, like... The menus and the like loading screen and the little like lobby where you get to move your character around is all like super laggy as shit. But like in the game, I have never experienced like a lag spike during any action or any frame drops or whatever. But it's a fun game. I get why everybody likes it. It's the only thing that I think is dumb is like you can win. There's a clear best strategy, which is drop to the most remote set of houses on the map, get decent gear, stay away from every other house as you go to the middle of the safety zone, and just camp, stay out of sight, don't invoke conflict. I actually won a game. I got number one. I think I only had 2 kills.
So the premise is survival.
Watch everyone
kill
themselves.
Right. The premise is, it's basically the fucking Hunger Games. You're dropped on this big island. It's the same island every time. And there's all these buildings that are all the same every time, but they are randomly generated what drops are in them. So you have a bunch of shotguns, a bunch of rifles, SMGs, pistols, snipers, and then melee weapons and grenades. And then some healing stuff and some different armors and backpacks. And all of that is kind of just roll the dice on what goes where. And as the plane flies over, you can jump out whenever you want and you like glide suit in the direction you want. And then eventually you parachute down. And it's really fun and it's really tense. And I love playing duos. I was playing duos with a couple of my friends where it's like you're on a squad of two. And when you get killed, you instead like go down into like Gears of War revive me mode. But it's a good game. I've talked with my friend about it. I don't know if we've seen the best of this genre, but he made some good points that I don't think this genre is something that AAA is even going to bother to take a look at.
Right.
Or like bigger companies. Like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is not, I wouldn't be like, this is a fucking great game. It's really fun, but it's, you know, there's a lot of design and especially visual stuff that can be improved upon.
Right. It's, you know, it's going to be based on your enjoyment of kind of being out there, being against people or having friends to play with. Or
yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're into that type of thing, especially if you have like a good sound card and you got some good headphones. You're probably gonna get some,
that's required.
Yeah,
that's required
because you're gonna be hearing people come up the stairs or around the corner, climbing up the ladder to go to the roof, and you have to be extremely careful because they might shoot you. You know, if you go out too far, like there's a lot of little things like that that can make really great moments in the game. If you're into that, you know, like where your life is on the line, like at any moment someone can clip you from far away. Like, no doubt. Like, people will sit back and snipe you. Some people are really good. I've watched so much of, like, montage videos and stuff, and I've played myself, and this is like, oh, you can start a game, and all of a sudden, death.
Yeah. It's legit, like, I love that everyone, I like the asymmetrical multiplayer aspect of it, where you all start with the same amount of nothing, but you could all get good shit. And you could all drop wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whenever you go over, like, the big city areas of the island, you always see, like 13, 14 people drop out because they want to get into the conflict immediately. They want to get some kills and they want to get good gear. Because, like, with, you know, 50 buildings sitting there, there's a good chance you're going to find something. But then you'll see some people are, like, hunters. And they'll wait for you to drop out in a remote location and they'll follow you. And they'll try and, like, corner you in like this two houses and just get the upper hand and get a quick kill.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways to play it. I think it's really fun. I've been wanting to play it all day. Like I've been doing other stuff because of like work, but I've been thinking about playing it. Like it's one of those good multiplayer games that's like interesting. And for an early access game made by a no-name studio that like was running 100 players at the same time on the same server. It's good.
Oh, wow. Like, I didn't know it goes that high.
Every game is 100 players.
And you have to keep going into the middle of the circle or you'll die outside the circle.
Yeah. So it starts where the whole island is open. And then about, I'd say like 30 seconds after you drop and everyone hits the ground, you can check your map and there will be a white circle around a large portion of the island. And that's the safe zone. I think it's like 5 minutes after that, the plasma wall starts to go in, and that's a big blue circle that the outside, and you can see it on the map, and you have to get inside the white circle or else you'll be in a zone where you start taking continuous damage, which I think H1Z1 did the same thing. It had like poison gas or something. And after the blue circle reaches the white circle and like the safe zone is now barred in, another safe zone will generate inside that safe zone. And you have like a couple minutes until that one starts to close in. And it keeps doing that. And at the end of the game, your safe zone is literally like the size of a very small field. And the game that I won, it was actually really intense because there was no cover for any of us. There was like four guys left and we were in a tiny field that was just like thigh high wheat grass. And so everyone's like laying on the floor and trying to like catch where other people are. And I saw some guy, I saw like a flash of movement because some guy switched guns. And so I just like blind fired into it and he died and someone got up to try and shoot me. And then that guy got shot and then I shot the last guy. It was great. It's a lot of fun. I really hope it goes out of early access and isn't one of those like
infinite
death spirals.
Yep. Yeah.
Because it has potential.
Arma 3, Daisy, and H1Z1 don't really set a good precedent for that thing eventually
Ark,
being considered.
Rust. All of
done.
Them.
Yeah, it's just like, especially given the circumstances of like this guy was part of those teams. I want to see it do well, but like the finalized version of this game would have visuals that don't look like they're from a late era PS2 game, which is what this looks like. Bigger draw distance, but it's a PUBG should just stand for pretty ugly but good.
Nope. Oh wait, that's what PUBG stands for?
Yeah, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh god, sorry. So this thing like completely passed me by, like swoosh.
It's massive right now. It's been top seller on Steam for like a month.
I've seen that abbreviation a lot of places. I've only seen the full name like twice on Twitter.
Yeah.
God, that explains a lot. Okay, so that's what PUBG is. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
I've yelled words about games, and you guys have yelled words about games and or Star Wars.
Yeah, that's the very light rule bending that I was pushing. It was basically, am I allowed to talk about Star Wars for 15, 20 minutes?
George the Rebel Weedman.
I'm breaking all sorts of boundaries. So we're gonna... Well, yeah.
I was gonna say, speaking of breaking all sorts of boundaries, it's time for the break.
Nice.
I don't even
push.
So this is the ultimate TOVG podcast, right?
Yes.
The yes. Ultimate as in the final. Which means it's got to be the greatest and the best. Which means we're going to horribly disappoint everyone by not really having that much news to talk about. But I did want to yap about the Far Cry 5. I almost said Far Cry 4, but I mean, they're like almost the same thing anyway. Far Cry 5 is officially in Montana. It feels weird to say that. On the other hand, it really shouldn't. On the other hand, it's like, okay, good on them for being weird with it. On the other hand, it's like, kind of to be expected. I don't know. So apparently, they got a neo-western setting going on, or at least like that's what I'm assuming. The trailer had like a cowboy narrator, but it's in modern day Montana, and there have been neo-western movies set in modern day middle of nowheres out west. You have some bad guys. They've shown in a piece of art who look like some kind of ultra religious conservative cult out in the middle of nowhere in Montana. You know, after Outlast 2 and Resident Evil 7, it seems like it's not a good time to be conservative Americana and not be victimized or vilified in the media.
Yeah, I just watched the little teaser for the first time because all I saw was the picture. I'm sure you guys know there's only like three scenes in the teaser, but the scene where it's the bell being rung at the church. Yeah,
the bell's cute.
But it's a guy smashing another dude's head into it.
That's cute.
The top comment right now is, I can't remember the guy in the tower's name, but his face rings a bell.
Oh, snap.
And fucking Ubisoft favorited that comment. Good job. Anyway, I don't know, like, it's a big company, so we could have pretty much zero social commentary at all, and it could just be, like, they're bad people that happen to live in Montana, but it does seem like there's some heavy religious implications. Like, this is going to be like a Westboro Baptist kind of
vibe to these guys. How original.
Well, I don't know. It's, I mean, it's
topical. Has that been tackled in a AAA game?
There is. I think so. I don't. I feel like there's an example at the tip of my tongue. I mean, there's Red Dead Redemption. I don't know if that really counts. The bad guys in Red Dead Redemption were like government spies fucking with the private lives of bandits who just wanted to rob each other and kill each other in peace. It was weird. That was a weird game to look on. There was angst. It was also like probably one of the most conservative minded games. The angst there was about like big government forcing John Marston into a life of crime. And the angst here is seemingly between this trend of Outlast 2 and Resident Evil 7 and now Far Cry 5 having the villains be conservative Americana definitely would seem to be poked and prodded from political movements that have arisen within the past 2 years when these games would have been planned and pitched. And considering the political movements that have continued onwards throughout this year and the oncoming one, I have a feeling this is probably going to continue. There's probably going to be more bad, evil guys and or groups in your media hanging out in the middle of nowhere, conservative Republican voting counties in between the two American coasts.
I mean,
and what I mean is like it's always religious people doing crazy things in like horror games or bad guys. There's always some type of religious.
Yeah. In 2003, not 2003, and like during the Bush administration in general, there was a lot of media with like super crazy religious villains. Remember Deliver Us from Evil, starring that wrestler guy? it was a cheapo nothing movie that came out the same year Borat came out. Came out a year after Team America came out.
Oh, God. Okay. Team America.
So also the crazy evil redneck family in Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
They weren't on like a religious bend, but they did have kind of like an anti-authoritarian streak. Where they're like, oh, that dang old cop's showing up again.
Yeah.
They were funny, though. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued in how they're going to balance a setting that should have a heavy civilian and police presence against the player's need in a Far Cry game to blow up everything and shoot everyone.
Yeah.
Which is something
I
can't wait for the boss to say, get on your knees and pray.
And boy.
Yeah, I just can't wait for that. That line is going to be great.
First person camera bobbles across some scary scenery.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
the secret ending to Far Cry 5 to 10 minutes in is they tell you to do that and then you pray and they're like, oh, well, that's all good. And then they just
you
attend church for about an hour.
So as much as like the Far Cry series is the blueprint for the generic open world Ubisoft game, I've always operated under the assumption that maybe that's because they're actually kind of good and that's why they get keep getting copied and repeated ad infinitum. And
they're not bad.
They're not. And there's a genuinely like fun, clever, funny moment of writing in the intro of Far Cry 4 where the evil villain of the game gets a phone call after like forcing you down to an evil, nasty meal. And he's like, don't move an inch. I'll be coming back for you. And if you actually don't press any buttons for like 15 minutes, he comes back, puts the phone away and is like, all right, now that that's settled, we're getting you out of here. And just like puts you on a helicopter and you leave and the game's over and the credits actually roll.
Yeah, see,
that's pretty.
That's
amazing.
The thing is like, I didn't really like Far Cry 2 specifically for AI and gameplay reasons.
Two?
But 2, yeah.
Oh, that's not the one you're not allowed to like.
What do you mean?
People really, really canonize that one, even though it has like some seriously janky gameplay issues.
Yeah, like when I shoot guys from like a mile away with a sniper rifle, get in a car, drive for 5 minutes, run, get out of the car, run, jump off a cliff, hide in a bush, and they pull up right next to me 5 seconds later, the same guys that I just shot at.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a bit janky and stupid. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a game desperately in need of a modding scene.
Yeah, not super into that one. Sorry, guys. But Far Cry 3 and 4 both had great villains that were interesting and well written. So if the focus on villains has made the Far Cry series a staple for this long, then I guess that's what I'm interested in seeing for 5.
Yeah, and fun villains. I don't know. Look at the art. They look like fun villains. You've got like a table with an American flag on it, a shitload of guns, a Bible, and a church in the background. This is like a perfect caricature of like what the rest of the world makes fun of when they make fun of your stereotypical American.
Yeah, I want to. I forgot. I think it was on the original tweet of the image by Ubisoft.
There's
or something.
There's even an apple pie.
Yeah, no, it's like pretty obvious what they're going for, but I think it was on the original tweet of the image, you know, where it shows this Midwestern family, I'll call them, with their Duck Dynasty knives and their
yes,
beards.
Duck Dynasty.
my brother looks exactly like them, so like I'm not gonna judge. But one of the replies on the image, and I was like, oh, you poor soul, you just don't understand, was looks like the villain in the middle is a huge douchey hipster, can't wait to kill him. And I was like, you sad poor little man, you don't even realize you're looking into a mirror.
This thing, like the picture has the Last Supper vibe going
Ooh.
With it.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
Good
that's,
observation.
That's,
very
that's
analytical.
Definitely what they were going for.
Yeah. Like all of them on one side of the table and everything. And yeah, it's
the focus on the center. Yeah. It's absolutely the Last Supper, but with a wolf that has a cross painted on its head.
Right.
A buck knife stuck into an uncooked steak. An apple pie, a guy who looks like he just shot up or is about to shoot up heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a problem out there. People do heroin in the middle of nowhere in America.
Yeah, that's not. There isn't much else to do but heroin in the middle of nowhere.
It's
America.
It's a real problem that actually exists.
I apologize to all of our Midwestern and Southern viewers. I don't view literally everybody down there like this. It's just funny to
well,
make stereotypical
internet,
jokes sometimes.
Matt knows all about these stereotypes. he has some stories to tell about a few of them.
I didn't realize. Nope. Did you catch the burning house in the background?
Yeah.
Oh, where's
yeah,
that?
Saw the, yeah.
Oh, there
right.
it is.
Next to the girl character.
Maybe that's a outpost that you have to clear out to
you
get
to
your
burn.
Fast travel point. Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's
the
planes now.
Character.
You got planes. So I feel
one
like
out
we're
of 57 barns burned.
This is ridiculous. We've basically like become exactly what Red Letter Media is parodying. Let's move on.
Okay.
We just like talked for an untold number of minutes about a piece of promotional concept art for a game that's not out yet that might not even be that great.
It's about 15 minutes, so a told number of minutes.
Speaking of things that aren't out yet and may not be great, but have great marketing materials released.
Sure. We're not going to talk about Code Vein again, are we?
No, we're talking about Castlevania, which has a cheeky little teaser release
now
for a Netflix series that apparently is happening. Which is funny, because last week
Netflix
we talked about Netflix series is apparently happening too. Now we have another one popping up, and this one has a actual trailer to go with it.
Well, the thing is, they announced this Castlevania series like 3 weeks ago. Like,
so they did not waste time.
No, they were like, yo, Netflix is like low-key doing Castlevania, maybe. And people were like, oh, okay. Well, I guess we'll see in like a year or two. And then they were just like, by the way, we already made it. And it's coming out in July.
Maybe in 3 weeks we'll see a trailer for The Witcher. That would be cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping so.
Whoa,
but
that would be sick.
So the Castlevania Netflix series is appears to be based off of the first Castlevania game.
That is plopped into an actual NES in the trailer.
Yeah.
Right. They do a funny little thing with that where they have like a blood red cartridge of the game that they put in. But it is, the animation is done by the same studio that did Adventure Time, if I am correct.
Really?
Sam.
Yeah, but well, it's not stylized similar.
Yeah,
it's an anime.
That is a surprise to me.
But I mean, like, It is anime style, like a American anime-esque looking style. But the studio's animation quality is really high.
Yeah.
And the trailer looks great. Voice acting seems pretty good. And fucking, I get to see a Belmont whip some dudes.
Holy crap. It's Frederator.
Yeah.
It does not look like it at all, though. Wow.
No. Yeah. It's, Netflix has a very good trend for original series, aside from, like, most people didn't like Iron Fist, which is, like, fine because I don't really care about superhero stuff. But, like, if you look at all the Netflix original series, like House of Cards, you have the good superhero ones like Luke Cage, like they kill it pretty consistently with their originals.
Yes, they do.
I'm trying not to get high hopes up.
Iron Punk sucks. Don't watch that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to get my hopes too high, but Castlevania looks fucking rad. So yeah.
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
I'm wondering how serious it's going to be, because they go from like 30 seconds of LOL, it's this cute retro Nintendo thing, to 30 more seconds of it being really serious, bloody action.
I think they're probably going to... The cartridge thing was just for the teaser, to show people that this is indeed Castlevania, not like a reimagining of Castlevania as told by M. Night Shyamalan or something.
And I think that would be interesting, is if how hard they stick to like the hokey 1930s monster movie roots that actually are all over the very first Castlevania game before it got all serious anime.
Yeah.
It looks like it's like, all serious anime, but
Bram Stoker.
Mm-hmm, Bela Lugosi is in the credits, right?
I don't know.
They might have changed his name a bit to be cute, but that was back when game developers didn't get credits when they were treated very, very poorly by the industry, which may not have changed because IO Interactive laid off a bunch of people this week. After last week, in which it was revealed that Square Enix was laying off IO Interactive in general. So since then, we have the GameStar news story from a reporter who has trusted insider sources saying that they still have the Hitman IP in their own possession. Since then, I'm working on a video myself doing some research. I have actually talked to that reporter. I've not been able to talk to anyone within IO or Square Enix themselves, but he told me, and this is public information that he's fine with me disclosing, as I will do in the video later on as well, but he told me that IO actually negotiated really hard with Square Enix during the initial buyout to keep their IP properties, because throughout the years, their name is tied so close to Hitman that of all the things they have under their belt, they didn't want to give that one up. And this news of extra layoffs, though, is something that's disconcerting to me, because he didn't seem like he was anticipating that to happen. And it's not exactly surprising, but this is actually the second run of layoffs the company has enacted in the past half decade. After Kane and Lynch 2, before they worked on the next Hitman, they laid off a bunch of people from the Kane and Lynch teams to just focus on Hitman because they were losing money and wanted to make the next game real polished and good. And they did. As it turns out, deciding to release it in little chunks of episodes with Always Online DRM really bit them in the ass, though. But now they're laying off more people while they still have a second season coming out. Square Enix got wind of how well the first season had done, which is not well at all, made a reasonable and rational prediction based off of that to not keep them on payroll to make a second season. Hopefully some other publisher picks them up, gives them the time and the money they need to actually put out much bigger packs of episodes instead of this like episode one starter pack with an extra optional upgrade to your episode two for a night mission if you pay extra for that one, with a different consistency of quality and scale for each of the individual episodes. The reporter also clued me into something that was also publicly known when the game was initially announced. It was initially announced to be just two episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when you look at the very first earliest press releases for Hitman, they talk about how they were going to first release a pack with the tutorial missions and Paris and Sapienza, and then another pack with the rest afterwards. It would cost $65 total. You would pay $30 for the first one, $35 for the upgrade, because technically there would be a lot more content in the upgrade, but you could also wait for both of them to come out and buy them together for $60. What ended up happening, though, is that either Square Enix or IO, someone in IO, still unconfirmed which party has more responsibility in this decision that turned out to be a really bad decision, to sell each level individually and kind of re-engineer the game for that. But that was really interesting to be reminded of, because I was reminded how on the podcast I was talking about it when they first announced the new Hitman and then kind of changed up their release schedule over the next coming weeks, and how confusing it was even before the game was out to know what kind of product they were making. That's just more bad news. There's actual layoffs happening again. Previously, after layoffs happened from them making a bad Kane and Lynch game, now layoffs are happening from them making a good Hitman game that didn't sell well.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. We talked more than I had anything to add about this last week. Like, it's sad to hear, but not any actual non-critics liked Hitman or wanted to buy it.
I can't blame them, though, when you like go to the Steam page for Hitman and see just how wacky the assortment of SKUs are. It's like, okay, which SKU is just the one I want? It's disappointing that when I got my press pack, which has the complete experience, I was talking to a friend of mine who bought every episode individually as they come out, and it turns out that me, as a minor shitty YouTuber, got more stuff for free than he got being an actual fan paying $15 per episode for each one, because there were some bonuses along the line, some like temporary stuff that went away forever, which everyone still had to deal with. But there's a couple bonus missions that take place during alternate versions of the levels at night that I got that he didn't. And that's not good. I mean, he's like the real fan. I was just the reviewer. Also, elusive targets suck.
Yeah, you've stated on no less than three other podcasts.
Do we have anything else to add to that topic, or should we?
Not really.
Okay.
Last but not least, Vanquish for PC is out. It happened almost just before we started to record, so I'm interested to see
game in the night.
How the like port reports are on that.
Yeah, TB's port report is already up.
Oh, wow. Do you know if the impressions are good or bad?
It came out like 2 hours ago. I don't really watch port report for games that I don't plan on playing.
Okay.
Which is, so I pretty much never watch port report is what I'm saying.
Well, when Vanquish is on sale for cheap, you should give it a try.
Yeah.
It's good.
I'll trust George's word on that one.
You just look at GIFs.
GIFs of action.
Or GIFs.
Look at GIFs of the game of Vanquishmen boosting along, doing backflips off of bad guys while shooting other bad guys in slow motion and striking cool poses on his way down. It's good for GIFs.
Give GIFs of GIFs of GIFs.
So that's the whole podcast. That's the beginning and end of it. That's 100% of all the TOVG podcasts.
Yeah.
So, thanks to everybody for listening all this time.
Oh, God.
Special apology to the guy who tweeted at me last week saying, hey, I've been binging the podcast from episode one. Are you guys planning on putting it on YouTube at any point? Ooh. Sorry. It's apologies.
I mentioned it like a long time ago. A long time ago, and we just never got around to it.
It is a lot of work to get a more than 1 hour long thing rendered in a video format and uploaded consistently every week, especially with other work that we have going on.
However,
but now we don't have to because it's dead.
Oh, gosh,
we do
stabbing is real.
But in order to play this funeral out with a celebratory upbeat tone, we
hang on before you get to that. I want to say how appropriate your conversation about Star Wars was this week.
Okay.
Considering the fact that George Lucas did not end Star Wars when Star Wars should have been ended, which is when it was still good, and decided to keep making Star Wars.
That's the path to the dark side. You don't want the TOVG podcast to go down the path to the dark side.
Or it already has.
Right.
It's what he's saying.
See, now, there may never be a TOVG podcast, The Phantom Menace, but maybe someday in the far future, there will be a TOVG podcast, The Tribes Awakens, a suitable successor to the show that some of you love.
Don't say that.
But in order for there to be demand for that, there would still... Well, I don't know. The Force Awakens might have still happened without the prequels. But it seems like the demand for them to return to the classic timeline was because people were so disappointed by the prequels. They wanted the franchise to get their shit back together and thus were able to bank on a, like the Coca-Cola Classics conspiracy theory. Imagine George Lucas being like, we'll make Star Wars so bad that once we make Star Wars good, people will buy it up by the millions.
So what you're saying is we need to start a really shitty podcast and go for like another 130 episodes.
Well, if we're going to do it like New Coke, we'd only do it for like 2 weeks. And then if we were going to do it like prequels, though, it would be just taking things way too damn far.
Well, what do you think is more successful, Coca-Cola or Star Wars?
Coca-Cola.
Then let's go the Coke route.
All right. We should do the spin-off route.
Yeah, but later when I'm less busy bicycling up hills to make it in time for the podcast.
The Kingdom Hearts route spin-off on other things.
TOVG podcast way, 1 1/2.
I figured if we ever wanted to bring the Tribes cast back, we don't even need to rename it because TOVG could just stand for Tribes and Other Video Games.
Oh!
Yeah.
The clutch. Yeah,
that's really good, by the way.
Yeah.
God, you're...
As George writes it down.
Jeez, you're good at this stuff. Oh.
Oh. People should hire me for, like, public relations and naming shit and fucking wit. Hire me as your head of wit.
Do you ever want to, like, consult or write video game dialogue? You'd probably be really good at it.
I have no writer experience, but
for more
I'd be interested.
Projects, yeah, you could give it a whirl.
I'd take a crack at it.
In the meantime, what we're doing right now are such illustrious and famous and successful YouTube channels as youtube.com/bunnyhopshow and...
youtube.com/sundergamer and
youtube.com/
sorry.
no,
not expecting that.
That visual. But I want to say thank you guys for watching. I know that these other guys are just gonna, you know, play some music or whatever, but I want to say I appreciate you guys for watching us all this time. And you know, I'm glad you miss us. I'm glad we're worth something. I'm glad.
I am happy that you're sad.
I'm happy that you're sad. No.
There's got to be a long, complicated German word for that. The happiness you feel someone else feels sad about your problem. It's like validation, kind of. Yeah. But like a really sick and cynical and self-centered kind. Matt.
Yes.
Let's not end on that note. I echo Matt's statement. Sincere thank you to sticking with us forever. And all those people who are like, I just binged all your podcasts over a month. Like, first of all, you're kind of, wow. But it's also sorry, but also thank you. And keep an eye on us in the future because we're making stuff.
Yeah. We're not disappearing from the internet.
So yes, thanks. Thanks for putting up with us. Thanks for blessing our mess, and
thanks for leaving long comment threads of just the word tribes on like most of my videos.
Speaking of which, we have live in the studio tonight in the same room that all three of us are in.
Yes,
is,
currently
the popular 80s hair metal band Motley Crue with their new hit single that was totally released to the public, the Tribes 2 theme song.
Yeah!
Wow, Motley Motley Crue, thanks for being here. Play us out one last time.
Goodbye.